live from the Poly Market Studio in L.A. It's the Young Turks. All right, Young Turks special primary election coverage in Ohio's 11th district. Cenk, Anna, and Rashad with you guys, and you as well, all the audience and the members. WM Black wrote in on YouTube Super Chat, come on Cleveland, pull Nina through for all of us. In our member section, happily Vax wrote in, Anna doing John's work, studying the counts.
Okay. Yeah.
Anna's on the count, okay. That's true that John Iderola normally does do that. I hope we don't have to do a damage report at the end of this night. Okay, I hope our win is indisputable at that. Okay, I'm here all day. Since we last left you, the count has not changed, 51.8 to 42.0. So that is a little under 10-point lead for Chantel Brown over Nina Turner. But as we told you before, not a lot of precincts reporting yet. And we are now getting word that a lot of the reports will come in a reasonable period of time tonight. Okay, so stay here. It looks like the bigger results are gonna come in a little bit later, but soon. All right, I've got 1,000 more things. We all do. But let me go to Rashad first.
You know, context matters, right? So I want to read two very different things as it relates to these candidates. And you can find both on their website. So when you go to Chantel Brown's website, it says, and I quote, over the last 10 years, Chantel Brown has developed a personal and professional rapport with Congresswoman Fudge. Through this relationship, Chantel has developed strong Democratic values and thoroughly understands the history and needs of the 11th Congressional District. This is under why you should vote for Chantel Brown. According to Chantel Brown, you should vote for her because she knows a congresswoman.
Yep.
This is the personality over policy. This is the good old boy system. In this case, they're not boys, but this is the same philosophy that also exists in Republican politics as well. Now, let me read to you what's on Nina Turner's page. Nina Turner says, I'm running for Congress because Black Lives Matter, healthcare is a human right, the climate crisis is existential, private prisons should not exist, and everyone deserves a living wage. Mic drop. A policy first agenda. You go to Chantel Brown's website, her policy platform, even when you expand the platform to read the fine print, this ain't on there. What Nina Turner is talking about, Chantel Brown is not. You don't get more clear than a policy that's present on one platform and completely absent on the other. And here's the other irony of that. Literally, Chantel Brown campaigned or started to campaign on policy platforms that aren't even listed on her website for her policy agenda.
Yeah, so that is such a great point. Now, let me expand upon it. I lived this race. I don't want to make it about me. I'm only telling you this because it gives you a perfect sense of exactly how Democratic politics works. Because they ran the same exact playbook in two completely different races, California 25 and Ohio 11. Now, in California 25, Christy Smith had almost no policies on her website, just like Chantel Brown, okay? I had pages of policies on my website. And I would beg the reporters, please, are you ever gonna talk about policy? And one time an LA Times reporter was unbelievably honest with me. Now, he didn't say it in public, but he said it to me on the phone. He said, no, we likely will not run any stories on policy. Okay, and so then Christy Smith would constantly talk about Nancy Pelosi endorsed me. Katie Hill endorsed me, there's this person endorsed me, that Democrat endorsed me, that other Democrat endorsed me. And then in her speeches, she would keep everything generic. In one of her mailers, her first mailer was, I'm for firefighters and veterans. Well, you left out puppies and rainbows. Okay, everybody's for firefighters and veterans. Who's again? That's not a policy position. That's absurd, right? And both Chrissy Smith and Chantel Brown, and I think we might even have it on tape, both said the same exact line, which is, I've been wanting to be a congressperson my whole life. Well, congratulations to you, but it isn't about you. But for those folks, it is. So if you always wanted to attain that status, that fame, that power, well, you'll do anything for it. So if the establishment comes in and says, do as you're told, the Chrissy Smiths and the Chantel Browns of the world go, yes, of course I will. What do you need? I'll do it. And they brag about it on the campaign trail. Chantel Brown says it, Chrissy used to say it, I'll do anything leadership says. I'm a good, loyal Democrat. I'll do as I'm told. The problem with Nina Turner is that she is not controllable. And think about it, guys, what does that tell you? Same playbook, two completely different races. It tells you the playbook is just shut up and do as you're told, and we'll give you all the money, all the support, and all the endorsements that you need. But if you ever dare think for yourself, and you step out of line, and you will not toe the corporate lobbyist position, we're gonna come for you. And they came for Nina Turner. Millions upon millions of dollars poured into that race. In a Democratic primary, it's not against Republicans, it's not against Trump, it's not against any of that. It's against a progressive who might expose them. So, and by the way, I mean, you wanna talk about picking generic candidates, because to them, what difference does it make? It's from the same factory that Pete Buttigieg was designed in, right? You make these corporate robots and you roll them down the assembly line. At least Buttigieg had an interesting name. Look at the two candidates I'm talking about. One is named Smith, the other one's named Brown. It's almost like out of, if you put it in a movie, they'd say that's a little on the nose. Come on, the two generic candidates are named Smith and Brown, right? And California 25 is predominantly white. Chrissy Smith is the whitest person you'll ever see. Ohio 11th is predominantly black. Okay, then we get a black candidate. Doesn't matter, the factories can make more. You get a predominantly Asian community, the corporate Democrats will find an Asian person to run who will tell them the Democratic leadership is great and they'll never disagree with them and they will do exactly as the lobbyists tell them. And don't forget, before Jim Clyburn, before Hillary Clinton, the first set of folks who picked Chantel Brown were the lobbyists. They started doing ads for her. And then Hillary Clinton came in and said, who do the lobbyists pick? Because what does she know about the 11th district and the 12 generic establishment candidates that were running against Nina Turner? She's like, oh, Democratic majority for Israel, ExxonMobil, the drug companies, the banks, they're all going for Chantel Brown. Then Hillary Clinton was for Chantel Brown, and so was Jim Clyburn. And so were all the corporate Democrats. And that's how this game is played. Okay. So look, let me go further now on identity. I keep bringing my race back in here. I don't like to talk about it for a number of reasons. Mainly because I'm keeping it real with you guys, because I lost and it wasn't even close, right? Now Nina has a million advantages over me. She's a great candidate. I don't want to get back into litigating my race. I'm only telling you because it's an inescapable parallel. And they run the same tactics over and over and over again. And you could tell when it's two races and not just one, right? So, but in that race, I remember talking to this wonderful, I remember her maybe more than any other voter. This African American woman came into a town hall that I was doing. Now, in most of the town halls, we try to reach out to everybody in the community because, you know, I'm less well known than their state legislator who I'm running against. So I want new people to come in. But of course, since people know me that are fans and viewers and progressives, etc., mainly progressives would come in and people who already knew me come in. But if people came in that didn't know me at all, I loved it, right? And this woman didn't know me from Adam, okay? She was an African American woman, maybe about in her 50s, you know, and I'm just guessing here, but roughly, right? And as she listened to me for, bless her heart, for like an hour and a half, and she asked a bunch of questions too, great questions. And at the end, I said, okay, now for those of you who would like to, we're gonna go canvas and come join us if you can. And she grabbed a clipboard and came up to me and said, I'm in, okay? And I said, oh, that's amazing, what happened? She said, look, I never heard the things you're saying. And now that I heard it, yeah, of course I want healthcare. And the way you explained how they kind of misled me on Medicare for All, I'm a little bit angry about it, right? And it's obvious from all the things that you're saying is that you're right. And she said, and Rashad, I'm really curious as to your take on this. She said, honestly, I never heard of a progressive. And we're gonna go canvass the mall. So then we go and get in our individual cars, we get to the mall. And then when we recollect at the mall, she said to me, on the way in, I called every family member I had and said, we're voting for this new thing I found out about called progressives, okay? And we're not voting anymore for the who's who. That's how she put it, okay? So Rashad, how much of a phenomenon is that, that in the African American community, that the Democratic leadership has basically tricked them into voting for the who's who?
Yeah, I had a very similar experience on my radio program, okay? So I worked for the Georgia Democratic Party as their chief strategist and political director. I was way more progressive than anyone who worked in that establishment, got into massive, sometimes public debates and arguments and even some Twitter beefs with established Democrats in the state of Georgia. Some of them are national Democrats today, but I was a true progressive. When I transitioned from partisan politics, cause I was tired of it, many of my colleagues were tired of it, I went into broadcasting and it kind of happened by a fluke. But in broadcasting, I made it very clear that I'm not a Democrat. When people would call the show and say, well, you're a Democrat. And I said, no, hail to the null. I'd stop being a Democrat the day they stopped signing my paycheck. I'm not a Democrat, I'm a progressive. And I said, this is what it means. So I went through a context analysis of what it means to be a progressive. One, you believe in progress, but what it means behind that is that you have a policy first agenda that literally moves the needle in ways that being a Democrat never will. And it wasn't designed to in a two-party system. So that was a shocker to a lot of those who listened to me on urban radio, black radio in Atlanta. And it took some time, brother, for them to warm up to the idea of a black person telling them, I'm a progressive because I have a policy first agenda. And when it was explained from criminal justice reform, immigration policy, access to higher education, when you actually explain what the progressive angle is, what you will find is that well over 90% of black folks are down with that message, well over 90%. And we took that show talking the progressive lingo in a way that was understandable. It was in an educational format. We had plenty of time on radio to do it. And I also allowed others to challenge what I believed and my ideology as a progressive. Well, that led to people saying, aha, what you're saying is that if the policy doesn't match with my agenda, it doesn't matter if it's a Democrat or not. That's not a progressive agenda for the community that I'm from. And that's why on Indisputable, we say we have a policy first agenda on the show and we lay it out plainly and transparently. So you're right, I experienced it as a radio personality, but I knew it was already there, brother, because even in my private conversations and when I would say these things in the context of even the Democratic Party, there were many who either didn't know what it was or they just really didn't care. But you have to create those opportunities to explain and to converse. And this is why I always challenge individuals around me, make sure you're in the room to have the discussion. I'm okay with being in any room where they will let me talk as I wanna talk. I don't care what room it is, because that's the only way to transform the ideology of people's perspective. Because what you will find is that there are some real good faith actors in the world who are simply antithetical to your movement because they are ignorant of it. And in order to banish their ignorance, you must be in the room to have the right conversation with them.
Well, that's why you're in this room, Rashad, because you're welcome to say anything you like.
that's right, thank you, brother.
So, Anna.
Just an update. So Summit County is done counting and Nina Turner did win it 49 to 48%. but there are likely 20,000 votes left to count in Cuyahoga County, and Nina Turner would have to win by 15% to 20% to overtake Chantel Brown's lead. So not to be the downer, but it's honestly not looking too great for Nina so far. She's closing the lead inch by inch, but it doesn't appear that she's winning counties enough to close the lead and win by the end of the night. But who knows? I don't know. There could be a minor miracle later. We don't know.
Yeah, I don't know that we're down to calling it a minor miracle yet. So hold the phone on that. But if that number is right, that was reported, that we got 17% voter turnout, like I said, then I'd be really worried, because 38,000 votes is a substantial portion of 17% of the voters, right? It's a little less, it's around half of 17%. But that would mean that with half of the voters still left to go, Nina would have to close a 9.6-point lead. But in order to close a, if you call it a 10-point lead, right, to round up, in order to close a 10-point lead with only half the voters left, you gotta win the other half by 20 points. So that's the math on how that goes, right?
So there were a little over 71,000 ballots cast in this election.
Is that right?
Yes.
All right, well, that is very bad news.
Yeah, can I remind people of something?
Yes.
John Ossoff ran for Congress, ran for House and the House of Representatives, he lost. A lot of people have forgotten that, but he was in a race that raised more money than in the history of a congressional district race. And he lost. John Ossoff was defeated. Remember when I said there's no finality in democracy? That defeat of Ossoff did not stop him from running against an incumbent US senator in that next election cycle. And he won. He won. So here's the context I'm trying to provide here. If Ossoff would not have run that first time and created the atmosphere, the excitement, got his message out to others, created relationships that he didn't have, made connections that he never would have thought possible, built coalitions inside of the Democratic Party and progressive movements, black and brown coalitions, LGBTQIA community, etc. If he did not do that, he never would be Senator John Ossoff today. So you have to look at it from a holistic point of view rather than the race right now in front of you. Now, I still hope my dear sister pulls this out, because it would be a victory not just for us at TYT. This will be a victory for America. We know that. But if she doesn't pull it out, it doesn't mean it's a loss.
Yeah, so different websites have different numbers, which is normal on an election night. And so another site that I'm looking at says that only 84 of the 513 precincts are reporting so far. And remember, if it's really only around 71,000 votes, well, okay, they could, you know, only 16% of the precincts could be reporting, but nearly half the votes came in the mail-in ballots where Chantel Brown had a 20-point lead. And so that could be decisive even with 84% of the precincts remaining, but we don't yet know. But you know, there's this bit of, I don't know if it's irony, but something along those lines, that in national elections, we, for a long time, now Ohio leans more decidedly red, unfortunately. But Ohio used to be, along with Florida, the prototypical swing state. So election after election, we would say here on the Young Turks, yes, but Cuyahoga County has not come in yet. And that's because Cuyahoga County is where Cleveland is, and you wait for the big cities to come in. And then that swings Ohio and can decide whether Democrats gonna win or not. And Cuyahoga County, for example, in 2004 came in, but it didn't come in enough for John Kerry, and George Bush won the election, right? So now in this case, this is Cuyahoga County. That's, and it's not the only county in this district, and there's Akron and there's Summit, etc. But we still do have plenty of reports, votes still left in Cuyahoga County, funny enough. And so we're certainly waiting on those. I don't want to get into what if this person wins or loses. I want to tell you more about the race. And I'll read your comments in in 1 second here. Here, in fact, I'll read a couple of them for you right now. Thomas Cunningham, who just joined as a member by hitting the join button below on YouTube, said thank you for spreading the progressive message and the truth. And then Progressive Canuck wrote in, go Nina, she has the Canadian progressives cheering her on. Progressives around the world, united we stand. And BTW, do we love TYT? Of course. So thank you for saying that. We appreciate it. ComSimp Radicuk wrote in on the member section, should we give Obama credit for not endorsing Chantel at the last second? Well, that would be a really low bar for credit. But I will say that if Obama had come into this tiny little race, one, it would have been telling about how much the establishment was panicking about Nina Turner and progressives, but Nina Turner in specific. But if he had, it would have been over. I mean, if Obama comes into a predominantly black district and endorses someone, that person is very, very likely to win. So thank God he didn't do that. But Clyburn these days is sometimes acting as an unofficial proxy. I mean, the establishment media has built up Clyburn as some sort of giant, and so he might have made an enormous difference here. So we'll see how that goes. But I wanted to build on one other thing that Rashad said. You know, Marsha Fudge is very popular in the district because she was the congresswoman there for a long time. And the reason we're having this special election is because she got appointed to become the Housing and Urban Development Secretary for Biden. And Marsha Fudge, if we're being honest, is a total establishment Democrat. And so if she could endorse, she almost certainly would have endorsed Chantel Brown. Now, would she have endorsed Chantel Brown in the beginning? No, like everyone else, she would have picked somebody out of a hat, right? So Chantel wasn't any more qualified than the other 11 people running. But once the lobbyists decided it was Chantel Brown, very likely Marsha Fudge would have also said Chantel Brown. But she, as a sitting cabinet member, she is not allowed to endorse in a race. So that is why Chantel Brown says, oh, I have such a great working history with Marsha Fudge, wink, on her website. And then they had like, I forget if it was like Marsha Fudge's mom or aunt or daughter or something come out and say, hey, I really like Chantel Brown, wink, right? So they did a lot of winking from the Marsha Fudge camp to lead people towards Chantel Brown. I don't know if that made a big difference or not, but you know, we're honest, we care about the facts here. That's why I'm telling you, there's no question if Marsha Fudge could have, she almost certainly would have endorsed Chantel Brown. And I have no reverence for African American corporate Democrats. That's the press bullies you into saying, no, you have to show them more respect. No, I don't. I have no respect for Steny Hoyer. I have no respect for any white corporate Democrat. Why would I weirdly have respect for establishment or corporate black Democrats? I just don't. And so, and you can't make me, and I don't care what you call me, I'll call you the same thing back. I don't care. I don't care about your stupid, dirty tricks in the establishment media and otherwise. A tiny bit of movement here, not much to know, but 51.3 to 42.5. So now it's almost a 9-point lead. Down to 9 points, it's got to go faster than this in order for her to catch up. But it's not that the numbers coming in are not catching up fast enough. It's that the numbers coming in are tiny. So we move from like 38,000 votes to 39,830 votes. So that's the reality here. Guys, when Chantel Brown said, I will never condition aid to Israel. And she put up a red box in her website. Red box means I want independent expenditures. You're not actually supposed to literally put, like in the beginning they used to put up red boxes, then they became more sophisticated. But Chantel was desperate, so she put up a literal red box, which means independent expenditures. I am willing to be corrupt for you. Please spend money. I will do whatever you need. And if that wasn't clear enough, this was before Democratic majority for Israel came in or any other lobbyists came in. She put up three quotes from board members of Democratic Majority for Israel underneath the red box. In other words, I want the right-wing Israeli lobbyists to come fund my campaign against this progressive. And they did, and they delivered. And by the way, if you're in the established media and you want to pull some BS about catching feelings on, like, oh, Ilhan Omar talked about lobbyists that are in favor of the Israeli government. Oh, that's anti-Semitic. Bull, I can't curse, but that is total horse crap. I can tell you that, right? No, there are actually lobbyists for the right-wing government of Israel. They exist, they spend millions of dollars. And don't come tell us we can't talk about it when it's an absolute certainty they did it in this race. And yes, they are very relevant. And yes, it is about the money. That is not in any way a reference to race, religion, or anything like that. The only color they care about is green. That's the only color they care about. ExxonMobil didn't come in here into this race because they care about charity or they care about the general welfare. They're worried that, oh, the American people might find out. And so Chantel Brown is going to keep that secret. She's going to take ExxonMobil's money and their lobbyist money. And I guarantee you, she will do exactly as she's told. And she'll vote for whatever the hell ExxonMobil wants.
What does Chantel Brown even stand for? Like,
nothing.
What is she
off? Chantel
Brown. That's the amazing thing about it. Like, I'm following along on Twitter, right? Just to see what people are tweeting about as the results come in. And of course, you know, those who support Chantel Brown, it's not even about supporting Chantel Brown and what she stands for, what she's offering policy wise. They're celebrating Nina Turner losing because their feelings got hurt regarding Nina Turner's criticisms toward Joe Biden. What has Joe Biden done for you so far? I'm curious, what has Joe Biden, the most powerful man literally on this planet, just told you guys that he can't unilaterally extend the eviction moratorium? And then it was abundantly clear that he lied, and then he turned around and said, actually, you know what, maybe because I'm embarrassed by Cori Bush calling me out on this, maybe I'll extend it for 60 days. I'm gonna go ahead and do that. Oh, so it turns out you lied to the American people and now you're extending it because you were embarrassed by progressive Democrats calling you out. It was progressive Democrats who fought to get that eviction moratorium extended during a global pandemic where we still have millions of Americans who are out of jobs. Okay, but you guys hate Nina Turner because she hurt your feelings over Joe Biden. So you're gonna vote for Chantel Brown, who's just gonna go along with the feckless, ineffective Democratic Party. Okay, great. Awesome.
Looking
forward to it.
We're gonna take a break here. I'm gonna say some dangerous things probably when we come back.
Don't say dangerous things.
But like these establishment Democrat supporters, the fanboys of establishment Democrats are really the most pathetic people around. Yay, corporate power. We will propagandize for corporate power and make sure that Americans don't get healthcare or higher wages. Yay. Saddest people I have ever seen. In servile service of corporate rule. Congratulations. Anyways, this race is not over. There's more results coming up. In fact, I know that in about half an hour, there's going to be a much bigger batch of votes coming in. And that will probably prove decisive. So stay right here. We got a lot more coverage coming up. We'll be back. All right, back on TYT's special election coverage of Ohio's 11th district primary election here. Janky Granik, Kasparian, and Rashad Ritchie with you guys. Everybody check out Indisputable with Dr. Rashad Ritchie. That's on after Damage Report with John Iderola. I'm so happy, ecstatic, proud to have Rashad as part of the network. He's just invaluable part of the network. And I love doing the show tonight with him. All right, first, let me give you guys a couple quick updates. We have new numbers in. We've got about 36% of the precincts reporting. That's why I say there's a big percentage yet to come in, which is, might come in within the next 20 minutes or so. You don't know when exactly it's gonna come in, obviously. Now 45,382 votes are in. We think there might be 71,000 overall. Now the lead is down to 8, 51.1 to 43.1. So that's the good news. The bad news is Cook Political Report has said they have seen enough and they're gonna call for Chantel Brown. Now, Cook Political Report, before election night, is a disaster. It's an establishment myth-making factory. It's generally garbage. Before election nights, but am I not the fairest man in America? On election nights, they're generally pretty good. And so you have to be able to weed out your own biases and perspectives to see what reality is. And so, I'm being honest with you guys on that. And so it doesn't sound overly definitive in the way that they framed it, but they think that Chantel Brown's going to win. So that is one data point, an important one on an election night. So why do I say Cook Political Report is garbage before election nights? They always say the establishment candidate is going to win. That's part of what leads to establishment candidates winning, is when everybody in the press says, that's the person that's going to win, credible, legitimate, wonderful, awesome, terrific, progressive, radical, illegitimate, terrible, don't vote for them, they're not going to win anyway, right? And so I've almost never seen Cook Political Report say that a progressive challenger is going to win, almost never. To them, the idea of a progressive winning is fantastical, couldn't possibly happen. So that's why on nights like Cori Bush's win, they were shocked out of their minds, they couldn't believe it. But on that night, they did eventually call it for Cori Bush at about the right time, so at an accurate time. So that's why I'm giving you all that context. Okay. Look, if we'd largely talked on the show about what would happen if Nina Turner won, and we were hoping that she would be a very loud and strong voice for progressives inside Congress, kind of like AOC, Cori Bush, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, and other progressives have been, and even more so. And we were hoping on top of that, that she would provide leadership. And again, that's still very much possible. The brunt of the votes are, or the significant portion of the votes are going to come in a little bit. But I want to talk a little bit about what if she doesn't win, okay? Well, I guess that, so first of all, here's the first thing that'll happen. The establishment will celebrate. They'll, like when Elliot Spitzer stepped down, he was the sheriff of Wall Street, and they got him on a sex scandal. And by the way, that was literally paid for, detectives, private tracking of Elliot Spitzer was paid for by corporate executives. And now they admit it, there was even a documentary about it. So corporations came to take out a huge progressive leader that was holding them accountable. And when they did, both on Wall Street and generally for Democrats, they literally popped champagne corks that night that Elliot Spitzer stepped out. So I'm sure they've got the champagne on ice right now.
They're already sipping it.
Yeah.
And
knowing the establishment, especially if Wasserman at Cook Report said it, they're probably already guzzling it.
I mean, those corporate donations certainly paid dividends, didn't they?
Yeah, and I'm sure they got a lot of champagne for that. But I'm gonna get to Chantel Brown voters in a second, okay, and supporters in a second. After they pop the champagne, what are they gonna do next? Well, they're gonna think, okay, yeah, dodged the bullet out on that one. Man, Nina Turner had a 35-point lead and we assassinated her politically, okay? We brought in every lobbyist there was, we spent millions. There was some, by the way, good reporting on the race, which doesn't happen often for progressives, but Cleveland Plain Dealer endorsed Nina Turner. That is nearly unprecedented. I literally cannot remember any other time that a local newspaper has endorsed the progressive candidate. Now, it might have been that Nina had a huge lead at that point. It might have been, by the way, that Nina was spending a good amount of money as well. Part of the reason that the newspapers support the establishment Democrats is flat out corruption. The establishment Democrats spend a ton of money advertising in those newspapers, and then they get their endorsements. It happens almost literally 99% of the time, okay? But in this time, I want to give credit to the Cleveland Plain Dealer. I don't care why they did it. They did a great endorsement of Nina Turner. And then New York Times near the end actually wrote a fair piece where I was like, oh my God, is this actually fair? And it wasn't positive for Nina Turner, but it gave both sides. I was shocked. The New York Times and a mainstream media outlet being relatively fair and objective almost never happens. So there was some press that was not bad in this case. Every other press, of course, was as usual. Like the Daily Beast was the worst of the worst. Total character assassination of Nina Turner. Not one sentence of critique of Chantel Brown. Daily Beast is fantastic on some coverage. In fact, we had a Daily Beast reporter on the show earlier this week, right? When they do long investigative pieces, usually by freelancers, and they do thorough research, they're really good. When they talk about politics within the Democratic Party, never read them. They're total trash and propaganda on that stuff. Okay, Washington Post was among the worst. Although we had a perfectly frank and interesting conversation with Dave Weigel of the Washington Post just a couple of days ago. So everything has nuance, nothing's black and white in that sense. And you have to be fair about what's accurate and correct and what's right and wrong, okay? But most of the media, as usual, attack Nina Turner. She's not supportive enough of Joe Biden. She won't bow her head. I mean, isn't that amazing? I'm going to pause here for a second before I tell you more about what the establishment is going to do and what the reality is and the Chantel supporters, etc. I'm going to get to all that stuff. But isn't it amazing? And Rashad, let me ask you this in the form of a question. That they had the temerity to tell a strong African-American woman that you should not have an independent mind and an independent voice. And you should only do whatever Joe Biden says. And if you don't follow Democratic leadership like that, you're disloyal and everyone should vote against you.
One of the greatest hypocrisies that we see played time and time again is what you just said. We're a party, or supposed to be a left-leaning party, that celebrates the diversity of others. But routinely what we see is a party that promotes an optical illusion of diversity, but inside they are engaged in assimilation. They want you to think exactly like them. And the truth is, they don't really care what color you are. Now they will say that. They don't care what gender you are. They don't care if you belong to the LGBTQIA community or not. They don't care about any of that. They will say they care about it. And if it works in their favor for the narrative that they are trying to create, they will use it to their advantage. It's simply a transactional play, not a transformational play. But you're right. And even in how they chose the candidate, Ms. Brown, that was all strategic as well, because as you said earlier, and I agree 100%, this was the anti-Nina Turner candidate. Now, I want to put this out there, because I think a lot of times we treat our politics differently than we treat anything else. When we make decisions about where we shop, about services that we pay for, we typically have a value system. We have a quality structure that we say this quality needs to be present. It needs to connect with my values in this arena. And then when it comes to politics, sometimes we will make decisions for political leaders that are contrary to the politics or the policies that we hold near and dear to our core values. We will literally vote for people that are adverse to what we believe in, because we like them, or because we think they had a really great campaign slogan, or they did a remarkable mailer, or somebody else likes them. Now, look at how this race was done. This was about who likes Chantel Brown. Even on her website. Her website is her standing next to Congresswoman Fudge, them smiling, and her with a little quote about, hey, this woman likes me and I like her, okay? This was about personalities, not policy. See, we're not winning it. And as a black man in America, this infuriates me so much. We can't vote for black folk just because they have black skin, because black skin don't mean that's your kin. And when we say that, what we mean is we have routinely been tricked by that ideology where white power structures have put black faces in front of us and told us that they were down with our movement and down with our cause, but they were antithetical to the progress of black people. But because they had black skin, we thought they were our kin. So now what do you look at? You have to look at the policy agenda. You literally have a candidate who's pulling away a victory in a majority black district. And when you look at it policy for policy, black folks ain't down with that. If you poll black people, the stuff that's at the top of her policy agenda is not at the top of what black people are concerned about. But when you poll policy by policy, poll black folks in that district, they'll tell you what Nina Brown said. Black lives matter. Healthcare is a human right. Private prisons should not exist. Everyone deserves a living wage. That'll poll high, but not the garbage that's on Ms. Brown's page. So what's the disconnect? Why aren't we winning? What are we celebrating with this victory? Any Democrat who celebrates this victory, they're not celebrating the status quo. They are literally celebrating the destruction of a real agenda to move the needle forward for disenfranchised people in America. You're not celebrating Chantel at all. You're not celebrating the candidate. You're literally celebrating the destruction of Ms. Turner and what she believed in and what she brought to the fold. And that's what pisses me off in political races like this, when you have a clear decision between somebody who is light years ahead of anybody else running and actually gives a damn about the people in the congressional district. And here comes the negativity. Here comes the lies. And we're doing it to people within our own left-leaning movement. And if they'll do that to Ms. Turner, what do you think they're going to do when they actually sit her in a position of power?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. And you know, you can't begrudge the voters in Ohio. It's really about what gets floated to the top of the news coverage regarding these types of races. Because they're not, again, they're not focused on the policy discussions. It's actually kind of amazing because I've noticed this trend of hosts who will take a video or they'll take a piece of content, and the content itself is not that big of a deal. I think the Killer Mike town hall video is a really good example of it, where the content of that video isn't at all, in my opinion, isn't insulting. In fact, I could see why Clyburn would be insulted, because he essentially endorsed Joe Biden, and Joe Biden turned around and delivered nothing. Nothing that Clyburn says he cares about, especially the voting rights issue, right? And so Killer Mike very calmly saying, like, he should have made a deal, you know, with Biden before that endorsement. Like, the media took that and blew it up and made it appear as though it was the worst thing that Nina Turner could have done. Has nothing to do with policy. It has nothing to do with how that moment is going to impact the lives of constituents in Ohio. But just the very nature of the media, like, they turn everything into a giant blood sport. They don't focus on the actual policies or the politics, because they know that the policies that Nina Turner actually stands for are policies that voters overwhelmingly do care about. People want healthcare. People want affordable housing. People want to ensure that the basics for survival aren't things that they have to kill themselves for. They're things that are considered human rights. But those are not the issues that ever get focused on in these types of races, right? So they'll focus on the cult of personality. They'll focus on, oh, who did this person vote for? Who did this person endorse in the past? As if it has any bearing on the quality of life for constituents in Ohio. And again, I'm not looking down at how the voters voted, right? It's about the narratives that get elevated in the media and how people are conditioned to think that garbage that doesn't matter at all is somehow the most important, you know, most important elements of an election.
I want to back that up with a specific example here. But first, tiny bit of more votes in 50.4 to 43.8. So that is a 6.8% lead. So down from 20 points to 6.8 points. The only question is there enough real estate here and runway for Nina to catch up? Now we're over 50,561 votes, okay? Or that's the exact number of votes. Okay, to Anna's point, now if you're a normal person that went to that town hall and you saw me, Killer Mike, and Nina Turner in that town hall, you would have thought that was an enormously popular town hall and Nina Turner is beloved in Cleveland. You might have thought, okay, well, look, it's her fans and her and progressive viewers that are going that thing. But my God, that place was packed and raucous, and they loved everything that they said, right? And you might have even noted, oh my God, they talked about helping small business so much. I was a little surprised by that, right? And there were other interesting notes there, but it would have been, it was impossible to walk out of that room thinking that it was anything but overwhelmingly positive, right? Even if you don't agree with Nina Turner, you'd be like, wow, that man, that went really well, right? But when the press took, what was it, about 15 seconds of an hour and a half town hall, and that's all they talked about.
That was it.
Nobody ever heard the rest of the town hall. So the people who watched it, so you know, a couple hundred thousand people at home, not necessarily in Cleveland, and a couple thousand people in the 11th district watched it, and they got something positive out of it. Mm-hmm. But millions of people got the message that the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Daily Beast and all those other things put out there, which was this 15-second snippet, because they weren't looking to accurately portray what happened in the town hall or what happened in the race. They were looking to politically assassinate Nina Turner. So if you were looking for that, you would scrounge and scratch to try to see if you could find anything, a 15-second snippet that could hurt her, right? Now you could add an hour and a half of things that could help her, but you chose not to focus on those. You chose to focus on the tiny little bit that could hurt her. And then you amplified it so much that's all that anybody ever heard about the town hall.
Exactly right.
And so that is why the mainstream media are liars. They're active liars.
They craft a narrative.
So it in a sense, look, anyway, look, we've been telling you about how the mainstream media lies through framing for 20 years on the Young Turks, and we've proven it in a thousand different ways. Now we could go to my race. So
can I actually give you an example? So our head of programming, Judith, just sent me this tweet from the Palmer Report. Palmer Report, if you're ever on Twitter, huge fan of corporate Democrats. But it shows you exactly what we're referring to. How it's not about substance, it's not about policy, it's about cults of personality. Congratulations to Democrat Chantel Brown for winning today's US House special election in Ohio's 11th district.
Which hasn't even happened.
It hasn't been officially called. But he continues, she defeated the toxically divisive Nina Turner, who helped give Trump a first term and tried to give Trump a second term.
What a goddamn liar the Palmer Report is. That is Nina Turner. Look, guys, there's now an alt left that we at the Young Turks are telling you are, whether wittingly or unwittingly, is helping Trump and the Republicans and Tucker Carlson and all those toxic people. Nina Turner is not in that group, not at all. She called, I can't even repeat what she called Trump. Here, I'll do it the polite version. She called him a full bowl of crap. But these liars come in and say, no, she helped Donald Trump. How? Name one way that she helped Donald Trump.
Because she didn't give glowing endorsements.
Oh, because she didn't kiss Joe Biden's ass enough like you do. Congratulations on being buried inside the powerful's ass. I hope you enjoy it there. I hope it's comfortable. And you must be so proud of your abode. So, no, look, there's a thousand things I want to tell you, but I'll skip to one of the things that I started with this segment. They think that they're done with Nina Turner if she loses. By the way, New York Times has not called it, AP has not called it. All these corporate fanboys are like, yeah, the corporate candidate won. We hate Nina Turner. Look at that. By the way, they didn't say all that. Like they insinuated, they implied, they inferred, they attacked Nina in subtle and sometimes not so subtle ways. But the minute they think she's not going to have power, then they go full blast nuclear, right?
Of course.
Oh, toxic Nina Turner helped Donald Trump. Because if they said it in the middle of the election, we say, how? How did she help Donald Trump? You guys are goddamn liars. But now that she lost, they think it doesn't matter. Progressives don't have power. Bernie lost, Nina lost. Okay, we don't have to worry about progressives. Let's just go back to business as usual. Lie, 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 lie. Okay, don't ever believe these liars in the mainstream media. So, but they think they're done with Nina Turner. They're not done. Okay, guys, all right, so some of the best progressives have won. Again, AOC, Cori Bush, Jamal Bowman, and the list goes on. He got 10 just Democrats, very strong in the House. I take those 10 over all the other Democrats combined easily. And by the way, most Democratic voters would too. Once you got them into office, you loved them. You loved them if you're a Democratic voter.
I mean, AOC is, I is, mean,
intensely popular, right? Intensely popular, especially among Democratic voters. So why did, by the way, why did AOC win? They didn't think she was worthy of lying about.
Right, they underestimated her.
They underestimated her, so she won because there wasn't wall-to-wall propaganda against her.
Right.
Cori Bush, they largely ignored, thinking, oh, Lacey Clay beat her last time and he's gonna beat her this time. We don't have to bother doing wall-to-wall propaganda and sending Democratic majority for Israel, et cetera, into this race, okay? And oops, when you don't have the mainstream media lying in a race, we win. When you have the mainstream media lying nonstop, we lose. Why? Because that's the only thing people see. Okay, so you're not done with Nina Turner. You're not done at all. Guess what? Now, all the strong progressives who lost, and if Nina loses, she would be at the head of that group. Well, now we got nothing left to lose. We don't have the presidency. We don't have, honestly, we don't have a great candidate going into 2024, if that's gonna happen.
We definitely don't.
Yeah, and we have no hope of a super strong leader coming in to lead progressives in Congress. Okay, well, game on. Now we don't have to be reserved in any way, shape, or form. I don't know that we were reserved to begin with. But if you thought we were unreserved before, wait till you get a load of us afterwards. Because guys, we're never gonna convince the corrupt to be not corrupt. And I don't need the New York Times permission. I don't need their approval. They can go shove their approval. They're goddamn liars anyway. I don't need CNN's approval. I don't need any of these people's approval or recognition or any of that stuff. Game on. Okay, we'll do media, you do media. I know you guys are bigger now, but we got Rashad Ritchie now.
And it's indisputable.
And it's indisputable.
Let me provide, thank you for that. Let me provide a little context to the numbers, okay? This is last updated at 10 p.m., which is really right now. Chantel Brown, obviously, 25,494, which gives her the 50.4%. Nina Turner is at 22,167. That's 43.8%. And I'm not going to mention all of the other candidates, but you literally have a difference between the two candidates. Don't let the percentages fool you. Those percentages are there because it's a low voter turnout and it looks massive. 3,327 votes separate the two. When you calculate all of the candidates combined, you only have a vote total of 5,561. If we're looking at this based on the model of 70,000 plus people participating, you have a lot of room here to make up 3,327 votes. I just want to provide that context to the numbers.
Yeah. And so guys, when I say, look, we have Rashad Ritchie now, I'm sure the establishment will chuckle. Oh wow, you have Dr. Rashad Ritchie. And you know, as much as he's respected, and by the way, he's won about every honor in Atlanta, etc. Is that all you got? No, my point isn't just Rashad, although he might do it himself. But but my point is, no, you guys don't get it. Now we can hire more and more hosts, okay? And we're gonna hire more and more hosts, and we're gonna get bigger and bigger. There's a reason why you need a progressive network. You can have rando shows doing X, Y, or Z, but without a network, we don't have enough power, right? Well, I built this network, and we're gonna have more power, and we're gonna be bigger, and we're gonna use it for progressives. And we're gonna use it to try to get bills passed, including $15 minimum wage and Medicare for All and Green New Deal. And I don't care what the rest of the media says. It's hard to understand that 20 years ago when we started Young Turks, why would you need the permission or the approval of mainstream media? Is it about ego? No, I don't care at all, right? But you couldn't amplify your message if you couldn't get it into the media. And we still have that problem today. But every day we grow stronger, they grow weaker. And you could see it sometimes in their desperation, right? And by the way, like when something gets hot, since they're not hot and they don't know what's going on, so Hassan's show on Twitch, right? All of a sudden, it's filled to the room with New York Times reporters. Did you guys know that? Because they're like, oh, we're gonna be cool. We're gonna be cool. We're gonna go on Hassan's show.
New York Times reporters?
No. Oh. Of course not hired him. Okay. No, they go on as guests.
Oh, do they?
Because it's hot. It's hip. Okay. Well, guess what's hot and hip? You think corporate stooges are hot or hip? No, you guys are useless, and you're destined to lose. Okay, oh well, on CNN we have the heir to the Vanderbilt fortune, Anderson Cooper, and the people love him. Do they? On Fox, we have the heir to the Swanson fortune, Tucker Carlson, okay? And everybody remember, bow your heads. And then we've got Chris Cuomo, who I like as a person, but is head of, you know, is now the head of the Cuomo dynasty. He used to be number two, apparently after today will be number one, right? And all these things that you guys need us. Nah, I don't think so. I don't think we need you anymore. I think we're gonna have the audience more and more as every day goes on. You guys are gonna have less and less audience. Part of the reason is why? Because people don't trust you anymore, and they're right not to trust you. So the three least popular institutions in America. Now this has been consistent for a long time, but a recent poll came out about a month ago. Okay, the most unpopular people in the country are politicians. The second most unpopular people in the country is mainstream media. And the third most unpopular is big business. Oops, your lies didn't work. In the short term, they work stunningly well. They worked really well against Bernie Sanders in 2020. They worked exceedingly well against me. And now they might have worked against Nina Turner. We'll get to that in a second. But in the long run, every day you bleed out viewers, and every day progressives grow larger online. So, okay, guys, if you're a progressive, it is super frustrating that for that promised land to constantly be a couple of steps later, a couple of years later. And it's, I know, having been in this now for about a quarter of a century, okay, that if you think you're frustrated, okay, it's taken way too damn long. But time is definitely on our side. Younger voters are definitely on our side. And if QAnon can capture like 10-15% of the country with absolute insanity through social media and social media alone, right? Imagine what you could do with truth and reality and policies that Americans love, as long as you can get past the liars in the Washington Post, the New York Times, NPR. Yes, I said NPR, and CNN and MSNBC is the biggest liars of all. No one hates progressives more than MSNBC. The idea that they're the liberal channel in Washington is hilarious and a joke. We're filled wall to wall with former Republicans, Bush Cheney acolytes, and yes, they're caged progressives that have to agree with whatever Pelosi and Biden says. And if every once every 6 months Rachel or Chris or somebody says something out that Pelosi doesn't agree with, it makes major news. Rachel Maddow disagreed 5% or 2% with Nancy Pelosi, giant news. Wow, you guys are so bold and brave at MSNBC. You see that? I have nothing left to lose. I don't care what you think. We're gonna beat you, okay? So they can say today and they will, and they'll pop their champagne if she loses. But hold on, more numbers. By the way, if Nina Turner comes back and wins tonight, oof. Yeah. Okay, they're gloating now, okay? And whether it's Nina tonight or the next night and the next night when we eventually win, I promise you guys, if you're progressives and you know me, I will gloat 1,000 times more than they're gloating tonight. And I will rub it in their face and I will love and celebrate their failure and defeat. I look forward to vanquishing them with every fiber of my body. So latest numbers are 50.1%. To 44.4%. So quick math on that is 5.7%, down to 5.7%. Now 56,361 votes out of potentially, we think, about 71,000 to 72,000 votes. Now that's much, much, much tighter than it used to be. Can you make up over 5 points with about a third of the electorate left to go? It's difficult, but not impossible. And by the way, that's why the AP has not called it, New York Times has not called it, no legitimate organization has called it. It's just the corporate pleasurers at the Palmer Report and the Cook Political Report. I don't know if they asked for a tip afterwards, after bussing the table of Pelosi and Clyburn and Hoyer and Biden, but they're the only ones that are saying that they think Chantel is going to win. So far, every vote that has come in, every batch of votes that's come in after the mail-in ballots has come in for Nina Turner. And so she's closed the lead, closed the lead, closed the lead. By the way, let's note something strange here. I don't want to go down wrong directions, and we will look at the numbers if we possibly can, and we'll see what happened here. And but there is a curious thing of the mail-in ballots going 20 points for Chantel, and the day of voting going almost completely for Nina Turner. That disparity doesn't normally happen. That's why I told you in the very beginning, if all the mail-in ballots went 20 points for Chantel, that is usually representative of the district. So that might be a really bad night. Now it's down to a 5-point lead. Why isn't it representative of the district? I have no answers to that, okay? I'm not telling you I have an answer. I'm just saying that is not normally what happens, okay? So we'll look into it. It's just the first, on the night of, there's a million theories, there's a million thoughts, and then you look at it the next day and you go, oh no, I see why. And it might be that the mail-in ballots were older voters and they were easier to trick into voting for corporate Democrats. You know, there's 1,000 reasons why it might be that way, okay? So again, this race is not over yet. No, I'm not taking the break. Let's just keep going to 7:30, okay? So so now, and by the way, thank you to everybody participating tonight. Jackhammer 2002 and Alex Place just became Young Turks members by hitting the join button below. And thank you guys, you make this show possible. And why do I say I don't need the New York Times, CNN, or the corporate Democrats at all? It's because I have you guys. Without you guys, we're nothing. With you guys, I guarantee you that we will be invincible and indisputable. Okay, by the way, speaking of which, James Provolone wrote in the member section, I wish there was a pocket Dr. Richie that I could pull out of my pocket to speak for me at every political debate I encounter. Well, that would be nice.
Right? That's very kind. We're working on that, by the way, with the TYT shop.
Yeah, I know, right? We should put that in shop TYT, like a bobblehead. You're like, oh yeah, but it actually accesses Rashad. And then the
That's
bobblehead
right, exactly.
talk. Could you imagine? But by the way, I like the idea of Rashad as like a political version of what now Sam Cedar has developed into online, where like everybody's scared of him, right, to debate him. And by the way, if you watch Indisputable, people are afraid to debate Rashad, okay?
It's becoming, the struggle is real, brother, booking people for the debate segment. But we got a great team, man. That team works really hard to get people on that debate segment every day.
You should reach out to Charlie Kirk. I heard he had a wonderful debate today against Vosh.
Yeah, you should reach out to Steven Crowder to see how fast he runs from you. But by the way, establishment Democrats, you're welcome here. You're welcome on Indisputable. If you guys are so right, we never cut your mics. We give you every opportunity to talk. We talk oftentimes for very long segments. You will have every opportunity to air out your point of view. But you better come correct, and that's why they usually don't come. Because they don't have any real points. Okay, now let me go to the Chantel supporters. So now there's a difference between Chantel voters and Chantel supporters, okay? So I would venture to guess, based on what I know about politics, that Chantel Brown's voters generally meant well, and they were influenced by different things, right? We're all influenced by different things. But in their case, it might have been, oh, they saw that it sounds like Marsha Fudge is on Chantel Brown's side. Well, we really like and respect Marsha Fudge, and so we're gonna go in that direction. Or, oh my God, Clyburn, I know Clyburn. Okay, whatever Clyburn says, that's more likely to be something I agree with, right? Mm-hmm. Now, the reason why you don't know that Marsha Fudge and Clyburn and Hillary Clinton and all those folks are not on your side is because the press never told you. Show me one negative article about Jim Clyburn in mainstream media. One in the last 40 years. You'll never find it, okay? Glowing, oh, good. Now, did anybody ever say, hey, wait a minute, what about all the corporate contributions that Jim Clyburn has? What about all the lobbyists that support Jim Clyburn? No, shh. If you tell people, then they might lose faith in him. And we've got to make sure that people still have faith in Clyburn, so we could have him trick people into voting for our cutout cardboards, okay, candidates like Smith and Brown, okay? So, and by the way, again, New York Times, Washington Post, I don't give a damn what you write. You wanna cry crocodile tears? Oh, Young Turks, progressives said mean things about Clyburn. Yeah, go ahead, write it. I am saying mean things about Clyburn. I think he's full of crap. I think he's funded by corporate lobbyists like all of the other Democratic leadership. I think he's corrupt like they are. Yeah, I said it, I said the word. Okay, and I think you're all corrupt, and I think you all work for corporate Democrats, wittingly or unwittingly. Okay, so Now, but the voters themselves, they don't have any bad intent at all. They're just seeing what they're seeing in the papers, what they're seeing on TV, what they're seeing. And so if every reporter they've ever seen, every report they've ever seen told them that Hillary Clinton and Jim Clyburn is on their side, why the hell would they think that they're not on their side, right?
Yeah.
That's what they would think, and Marsha Fudge, etc. Because did the reporters ever tell you about any of their lobbyist friends? Did they ever tell you about any of their corporate donors? Did they ever tell you that maybe they're more loyal to the people that gave them millions of dollars as opposed to you, the voter? No, they never told you that. It's not your fault as a voter. It's the media's fault for lying to you, both explicitly, but also more importantly, implicitly. Guys, we're not the lunatic right wing, we're not the alt left. This is a rational discussion about how politics actually works. So there is no memo that anybody writes at NPR or New York Times or CNN and says you must support the corporate candidates, this is the list of corporate candidates, you must attack progressives. No, it's groupthink. So what is the one thing editors never discuss? Corporate money. Why do they never discuss it? They say, oh, it's because it's normal. Is it? Is corruption normal? Is billions of dollars overall given to politicians normal? Did you know that between 2010 and 2015, there was the top 200 companies that gave to politicians gave $5.8 billion. That's a lot of money, $5.8 billion over 5 years. And that was before the dark money got way worse, right? $5.8 billion. You think they spent $5.8 billion for their health? No, they spent it to bribe politicians. Everybody knows that, except the media. The media goes, no. I don't think those billions of dollars affect the politicians at all. If you're a member of the media and you did not report on the money that politicians take, you are an implicit liar. You are a person who is supporting the status quo and supporting corruption by never talking about the actual reason why they do what they do. You are part of the corrupt system. Oftentimes you don't even know it. You think, well, what? I don't know, what do you mean? They hired me, I'm doing my job. Why did they hire you, schmuck? They hired you because they knew that you would do as you were told. Your editor would tell you never cover the money. That's normal, that's wonderful, that's great. In fact, if somebody has a money advantage, unless they're progressive like Nina Turner, if they have a money advantage, then they're the better candidate, the official candidate. And the word they use is credible. That's the most important, most toxic word in Washington. They are the credible candidate, and the progressive is not credible. And that right there is the biggest nuke they have, and they use it in every race. So that's how the voters get tricked into voting for against their own interest. Now one more thing. You say, why do you say tricked? Well, right now, Chantel supporters, if they're watching, are both exuberant and hearing this, are screaming into their computers or laptops or TVs or iPhones and going, that is outrageous. Maybe they did want Chantel Brown's positions. Really? What are Chantel Brown's positions? She says that, I'm generally in favor of Democratic positions and the ones that we're all pretending to be in favor of. But Nina Turner fights for those positions even more. So you have to go to the differences between Nina Turner and Chantel Brown. What are the differences? Chantel Brown is not for Medicare for all. But wait a minute, when you ask Democratic voters, 70% of Democratic voters are for Medicare for all. If you ask it as universal healthcare, it becomes nearly 80%. But Chantel Brown is not in favor of that. So why did you vote for someone that does not agree with your positions? Because they lied to you, they tricked you. If the media said, here, if you're for universal healthcare, Nina Turner is definitely in favor of it. And here's Chantel Brown saying that she might not vote for it. In fact, she says she won't. She's not for Medicare for all. She's not for universal healthcare. Would they have still voted for Chantel Brown? Very unlikely. Chantel Brown's not gonna do anything about higher wages. She's gonna listen, she promises that she'll only do whatever Pelosi and Biden say. And Biden says, no, I don't want the $15 minimum wage. I sent my two Delaware senators to vote against it.
The thing I can't get past is just she bluntly stated that she will continue voting in favor of giving literally billions of our taxpayer money to the right-wing government of Israel, regardless of what they do, no conditions, no strings attached, doesn't matter what they do. In the meantime, though, here in the United States, people are getting kicked out of their homes in the middle of a pandemic. People are getting evicted. People aren't even able to afford their own healthcare. Like, I mean, it's insane. It's insane that a candidate can just bluntly, transparently say that. I don't even know if most voters in Ohio's 11th district know that she said that. That's the thing about the media, right? Because I know that if I saw any candidate say that about any other country, like, I don't care if it's Israel, I don't care if it's Mexico, I don't care what country it is. If someone said on national television, oh no, I'm gonna always vote in favor of sending billions of dollars to this government or that government, regardless of what they do, no strings attached, I'd be like, no, not interested in that.
Look, Norway's a perfectly pleasant country. Norway. We like Norway and Norway. It's and it's actually one of the most progressive countries. So yay, Norway. If a politician said, I will never question Norway and I will always send billions of dollars of taxpayer money, your money, to Norway, I'd be like, why? What a weird thing to state. I like Norway, but why would you never question them?
Yeah.
Why would you make our why are you promising to send billions of dollars of our money to Norway without ever conditioning it on them doing the right? What if Norway has some sort of craze and they decide they're gonna go right wing? Well, then I don't want you to send them money.
Yeah.
Besides which, I don't even know why we're sending money to Norway, right?
Yeah.
But when you say it about Israel, does the media go, hey, that's an interesting position? That's a weird position for Chantel Brown to have. Oh, look at that. Democratic majority for Israel spent millions of dollars doing campaign ads for her. And she says she'll never question the state of Israel.
Okay.
That did, if you're a reporter and that didn't seem weird to you, I got news for you. You're not actually a reporter. You do propaganda in favor of the corporate rule.
So
you're a sick, sad person.
Rashad, should I pour more fuel on the fire that's sitting next to me right now? Let me ask you first. Should I do it?
Yeah, you should. And let me provide a little more context.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I agree with you 100%. If you are a person who said, shame on the Trump administration for connecting with Russia to overturn or to weigh the outcome of an election, to influence an election. If you say, well, Donald Trump and his cronies tried to get foreign countries to influence an American election. If you say that's bad, please understand this. You must say, to retain your intellectual integrity, that what Chantel Brown said is bad too. By saying, I have a loyalty to a foreign country, that is a blind loyalty as some type of test in order to be approved for an American election, that's bad. All of that is bad. Here's what's interesting. That was obviously a loyalty test. She passed it for the people that she wanted to influence. But here's where I'm at with all of it. If you call out bad cops, you call out bad cops because you're calling out the policies also associated with protecting those cops. Well, I go more than that. I call out cops that say they're good, but they refuse to call out bad cops. Okay, here's the thing. If you're a Democrat and you refuse to call out the Democrats that are adversarial to your progress, well, what makes you good? What makes you part of the solution? And listen, I know that my words may be harsh to some, but think about it this way. If we're constantly telling everyone, we have to be a moral core for what progress is. And if we're willing to call out bad policing, criminal justice dysfunction, injustice in the justice system, we can't then be blind to our own mess around us as if it doesn't exist. It makes absolutely no sense that somebody running for office in America can say without question and rebuttal from mainstream media, hey, I'm going to always vote for this foreign country to get money. You don't even say that, damn it, about people that are homeless. Mm-hmm. When has a politician said, we're gonna always make sure we take care of the homeless people and vote to make sure they have money and housing and everything else?
Homeless people have no power, right? I mean, it's amazing because they just tell you bluntly, like, we will support the powerful. And ignore the powerless. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible.
That's why Rashad's show is called Indisputable. That is an indisputable point.
Yeah.
When have you ever heard a politician say, I will support the homeless with no conditions. Okay, yep. No matter what the homeless do, I will support them. By the way, you could say it about the poor, you could say it about middle class, you could say it about almost anything. You could say it about the average American worker. No, the only thing you say that about is apparently is Israel. And to the press, they don't make note of it. They think that's interesting. Look, guys, on TYT, we will never tolerate any anti-Semitism, right? And we fight against that when the monsters in the right wing do it. And we will always do that. So the religion and supporting the state of Israel, the current right-wing oppressive government of Israel, are two totally different things, right? So yeah. I'm against the current Turkish government, even though I'm Turkish. By the way, I was vehemently against the American government when Trump was president, and I'm an American, okay? So this doesn't have anything to do with religion. But when it comes to the Israeli lobby in this country, gloves are off. You guys want to come at people, at progressives, and spend millions of dollars so you could buy loyalty to the right-wing government of Israel? We're gonna call you out, and we're gonna call you out super aggressively. And I'm not gonna listen to any goddamn mainstream media journalists, so-called journalists, saying, okay, I'm gonna take a perfectly legitimate point about them spending millions of dollars to take out one progressive after another, and then call you anti-Semitic. Have at it, Hoss. Call me anything you like. You've already done it. You've done it 1,000 times. We got nothing left to lose. You guys are liars. We know it. Doesn't matter. You can make up anything you like. Everybody makes up stuff about me. You just go online. It doesn't matter. Just join the line. It's a big party. You're late. Call me anything you like, okay? But I'm gonna call out the Israeli lobby in this country super aggressively. They spend millions upon millions upon millions of dollars, and they demand loyalty to another country. I would hate it if it was about Turkey or Canada or Norway or any other country that I like. And I'm not gonna tolerate it for Israel. No, this is insane corruption, insane corruption. Now Chantel Brown says, oh, that's it. I have given over my judgment, my mind, my willpower to the people who bought me. Those are the lobbyists, and they did buy her. Any honest accounting of this election would say that the Democratic majority for Israel bought Chantel Brown lock, stock, and barrel. That is a fact. Go ahead and write it. Go ahead and write it. Oh, can't believe Cenk said that, right? Okay, then are you gonna write the context, the full context? Oh, by the way, they did spend millions of dollars, and she did say that she would never question the state of Israel. Are you gonna write that? No, if you're a mainstream media reporter, you're a goddamn liar, and you almost certainly will not write the context. So it doesn't matter. I know you're already not gonna write the context. We have nothing left to lose. We have nothing left to lose, okay? So enjoy. I've got more where that came from. I gotta give you a quick update, and apparently she's gonna pour fuel on my fire.
Yeah, oh, we'll do that for the members only bonus episode, which starts in a few minutes.
Damn it, all right. I am not saying that about the results. I'm saying about I want to keep going. But anyway, 49.8 to 44.7. So that's a 5.1% lead with almost 60,000 reporting. Can you make up 5 points in about 10 to 12,000 votes? Super hard, but not impossible. That's why it hasn't been called. And it is about a 3,000 vote difference now with about 11 to 12,000 votes actually left. Boy, she'd have to win substantial number of those, but it's not impossible. I'm gonna read a couple of quick things here. Seamus Connolly wrote, keep fighting. This is Super Chat. Jan Weisbert said, Nina will always be a winner. Moo Young said, Bernie lost twice for president. And look at how much those losses changed the country. It's never over.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay.
It's about the war. And this
That's right.
Just one battle.
That's right.
In a longer war.
So. Super important battle, we're keeping it real.
Yeah.
But it is about the war, not the battle.
Exactly. I am not gonna read this until we get to our members only bonus episode. So, because listen, I would love to do it now. But you see what happens with him. You set him off and he goes on like by himself for 30 minutes straight. We can't do it, sorry.
I love it. I love it. Before we go to the bonus episode, let me leave this with people who are watching here as well. It is chess, not checkers. And what that means is it's about position, not just taking a piece off the board. This race, win, lose, or whatever, creates positioning. There are some victories here. Look at how much money she was able to fundraise. look at how much money they had to spend against Nita Turner in order to be effective and competitive. So it's all about position. There is no finality in democracy. We are continuing to position ourselves for an ultimate checkmate on the other side.
Yeah, and by the way, just a quick note on that. So, you know, you get these idiots on the alt left now saying, oh, well, you voted for Biden. Oh, you pretend to be angry at Biden. Do I look like I'm pretending? and but you vote for Biden. Yeah, because the other choice after the primary was Donald Trump, who threatened right. to end democracy. So that goes to Rashad's point there. So if you end democracy, then the battle isn't over, the war is over. And then you got no chance and no hope for progressives. If we keep the war going, remember, younger voters are massively progressive, right? Time is on our side. But in order for that to happen, we have to have democracy in place. The establishment is a behemoth, an awful power, right? And one we've been fighting for 20 straight years. These new fascists on the right are, by the way, I'm not the only one calling them that now. One of the top conservatives in the country in the old days, about 5 years ago, just wrote an op-ed, and I'm gonna try to get him on the show for you guys, Charlie Sykes, just wrote an op-ed saying, no, here's evidence 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 as to why the right wing in this country is actually now turning officially towards fascism. And they're starting to support fascists abroad, they're starting to propagandize in favor of fascists of the past. It is a dangerous, dangerous place to be. Guys, this is a primary in the 11th district. You fight super hard in the primaries because that's your one chance to get progressives into place. But then when you get to general elections, do not listen to the liars who tell you, oh, just vote for Trump. Oh, just vote for Republicans. Oh, punish the Democrats, or don't vote at all, or vote for Jim Jablowski, who has no chance of winning, siphon away votes so that Trump and the fascists can win. No, the fascists are the worst because they will end the game. Once you get past them, then we go back to the long war against the establishment, which is what we're in the middle of now. And so, look, guys, we blew past the commercial break and we went in half an hour longer than we were supposed to live. So that's why we're gonna have to go to members only because we have a schedule here, etc. I hate to do it before all the results are in, and they're still coming in. The most important results are gonna come in here. But I want to say one last note so to everyone who's live, because I don't want people to miss it. There's one other giant factor in this race I've been meaning to get to. This is a heavily Biden district, okay? So now it's a little skewed because Ohio was late in the primary, and at that point it was nearly over. So more people were voting for Biden because they thought he was going to win. But the fact that it's a heavily Biden district is relevant and might have influenced people as well. So those are among the different factors, and I didn't want to leave on air without you knowing all of the factors. And so now, why are the folks in that district more heavily Biden? Well, that again goes back to the earlier conversation that we had. But I don't know a single vote. Well, now I know a bunch of voters, the ones that are rich and love the status quo. But average voters that go around saying, "Nah, I don't really want universal health care. Nah, I don't really want to fix the climate. Nah, I think the climate's great as it is. Nah, I don't want higher wages. Nah, I don't want Democrats to fight for me. I want them to agree to corporate tax cuts for the rich." I don't know any real Democratic voter that thinks that isn't incredibly rich, right? That's why they have to be tricked into voting for Joe Biden and Chantel Brown and all the corporate Democrats. And that's the job of the media. It's not to manufacture news, it's to manufacture consent. And so if Nina Turner loses in Ohio's 11th district, it's because the press did a great job of manufacturing consent, both in this race and in the big picture. Okay, we got a lot more, and apparently Anna is gonna tell me something that's gonna piss me off way more in the post game or the bonus episode. That's just for the members. We're gonna do that now. You can hit the join button below on YouTube. You can go to tyt.com/join to become a member and hear our bonus episode every day, let alone all of our shows that you get, including Indisputable, every day. If you're a member, you can access it anytime. And if you have Amazon Prime, by the way, you can also get it for free through Twitch. Find out how through tyt.com/prime.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.